And stretch.
And stretch. And we're here. Welcome to this episode of the ESG Fitness Podcast. I have Mr. Andy Hamilton here. How are you?
Yes. The international man of mystery, seeing as I've not been around for a while.
It's literally been over a week and I'm like, who is this?
Where have you been? Nah, good. I'm good. It's been a good week. A good couple of weeks, actually. Good check-ins over the weekend. Was it the weekend there? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good check-ins over the weekend. Working with clients. It's been pretty full on. How about yourself? You've been on the go.
Yeah, it's been busy. It's been good, though. Yeah. This weekend was busy. Did you win football?
Yes, we won 16-1.
16?
1-6-1, yeah.
Jeez.
We won 16-1. Yeah, it was a bit of a cricket score. So we won. Considering we got pumped 9-0 the week before, it was kind of, I think we kind of needed that as a bit of a lift in the old mindset. So,
do you know what I think I would prefer watching, like, not professional football, because 16 goals sounds like quite a lot of fun, but you know, like, usually in, like, professional football it's like 1-0. Great. And I was actually looking at something else, so I missed it.
To be fair, it was 16-1 and it sounds like a really one-sided game, and the last like 20 minutes was one-sided, but like the first 70 minutes was like end-to-end stuff. Like, we were going up one end, they were going down the other end, we'd come up, we'd obviously score, they ended up scoring quite early on, and then they hit the post and the bar and stuff as well. So there's a lot of action in the game. So yeah, we've got a game tonight actually against an under 20 side. So bearing in mind, I'm probably old enough to be most of their dads. that should be quite fun. So yeah, that'll be interesting.
That will be. Did you know, and like, this is like not really that surprising considering it's Hannah, but Hannah used to be like Scottish team football.
Yeah, I kind of got that from some of the stuff that she mentions, but I didn't realise that she played at that level. It's pretty awesome.
Pretty great. Okay, we've got loads of questions, don't we? Oh, also, before we get onto that, did you see the post I put up this morning?
Which one was that?
It was about habits.
I think I did. Let me just
God, why aren't you up to date with my social media? Jeez. I put it up a whole 30 minutes ago. But basically, yeah, it's a lot of people have been commenting on that.
You've got, it's been up for 58 minutes and you've got 494 people have liked it and there's 70 odd comments.
It's a lot of comments. Yeah. I think it's because I've basically gone against what most people say. How surprising of me.
I think, do you know what? You genuinely, it's always that one where you get these people that read, because it's over four posts, like four pictures. They read the first one and then they get ultra triggered without reading the rest of it and going, actually, you've just answered why I shouldn't be triggered from the first bit.
Well,
it's just standard.
Yeah, I think some people will be triggered by this. And, like, they're totally open. I'm open to discussion on this. Like, I've not fully made up my mind. But I think there is this notion. So the post is about habits and how we focus so much on habits. And, like, I'll include myself in this because a lot of the time we give this chat sometimes, like, guys, diet and exercise will come, like, it will just become a habit to you and it'll be so much easier to maintain. And it will become easier for sure. Like, when you're starting something new and everything's new to you, like, and there's a lot of barriers up and you kind of have these like limiting beliefs and things. Yeah, like initially going to the gym might be quite hard. It's not as hard like when you've been doing it for years. But I don't think it ever becomes a habit in the sense that a lot of people, or in the way that a lot of people explain habits. So a lot of people, the definition of a habit is it being basically effortless. Like subconscious, like you don't really have to try to do it. And I don't think that's ever going to be true. Like, maintaining a lean physique in an obesogenic environment is never going to be effortless. No. Going to the gym, realistically, is never going to be effortless. You're not just going to turn up there and be like, absolutely no idea how I got here and just did a session. Like, it's never going to be completely subconscious. And like Hannah commented, and I completely like agree with her comment, like maybe I'm pushing that almost too literally. Like, of course it's not completely subconscious, but I do think that there is this notion among people that maintenance will almost be easy, and that these habits or these actions will become easy and won't require effort. And yeah, they might require slightly less effort, but they'll always require effort. And if you resent the effort that you need to put in, you'll always be working against yourself. Like, it's always going to be really hard if you resent that. So I think really the key to maintenance isn't like creating better habits or these turning magically into habits or things that you don't need to put effort into. It's about changing the way that you see the effort that you're putting into it. Like, if you don't resent it and you see it as worthwhile and you see the benefits that you're getting from it, completely different. I don't, like, of course it takes a hell of a lot of hard work to maintain a lean physique. Yeah, it does. But I think not working against that or not, yeah, like, it's resenting the effort, right?
Yeah, I think you've got to look at stuff like for me, habits is something that you need to be kept being reminded of about what you need to keep doing. So it's never going to be like habits and habitual, like two completely different, like, although people cut, it's obviously joined them together, they're the same thing. I actually would say that exactly the same as you, they're massively different. The thing that we need to look at as coaches is keeping people on top of those good habits that they've created and keeping them doing it. So that's what we do week in, week out, is what are your habits that you're going to stick with this week, because you're going to have to be mindful of them to keep them going. Because as you said, how easy is it, or how habit doesn't come second nature to make sure you get your six vegetables in. You may need to go out and think, well, I need to go and, like, you're not just going to find them hanging. Well, some vegetables you'll find hanging on trees, but, like, you're not going to have that thing of, it's just going to, oh, automatically I've just picked six vegetables out of my fridge. Like, no, you've actually got to be put a bit of thought pattern into it. It's the same thing. I actually had a pop one up about excuses the other day, and it was like this whole thing about people claiming that there's no such thing as a good excuse. Well, no, there is. Like, life throws stuff at you and excuses do come up. It's down to you to work out whether or not that's an excuse that you're going to let yourself away with. So my analogy was, if you couldn't food prep because you crashed your car, that's a perfectly valid excuse. However, if you couldn't food prep because, oh, it's raining outside and I don't want to have to walk to the shop to get the food, that's a shite excuse. So, like, you know, we can, everybody, I think it's one of those ones where people, as soon as you put a slightly different slant on anything, so if you look at it from a slightly different viewpoint, people will always question it. But, you know, that's what we do.
Yeah, I think the thing with excuses is there's always an excuse if you look for one. Always. Yeah. Like, you'll always find an excuse, but you can also find a solution. Like, even if you have crashed your car and you couldn't food prep, yeah, that might be an excuse not to food prep, but it's not an excuse to overeat your calories. Like, you can still go to Tesco and buy something that's basically prepped food. Like, buy a thing of salad, buy some chicken, get half a roll or something. Like, bam, great. It's basically the same calories and macros you would have had if you'd done the... Like, there's the solution for you. Or you can decide to accept that that's an excuse, and so you had to go to Greg's and eat five sausage rolls. Like, okay, that's your own choice though, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
And then you have to own that choice.
Yeah, and I think that's it. People need to... The whole owning it is the key to an excuse. If it's an excuse that you deem acceptable that you're not going to do something, in fact, fine. You deal with that. But you need to call yourself out a bit more and go, actually, that's a shite excuse. I better just go and do what I was going to do anyway.
Yeah, I think owning it is accepting that literally everything you do is a choice.
Yeah,
you're choosing to do that. Like, you're choosing to overeat your calories. And that's not to say, like, we're not judging. That's not a bad thing necessarily. Yeah. But it's still within your control. And I think as soon as you fully accept that, then you're, like, taking ownership for your actions. And I guess, like, what you were talking about with habits, like, I think probably a better word than habit and, like, habitual is just the action that you're taking. Like, what actions do we need to take? Because it isn't habitual. Not in the way that, like, and I think the words sort of change slightly within the fitness industry, but in the way that, like, a habit is, like, sucking your thumb.
Yeah.
Initially, like, that's like the Oxford definition isn't sucking your thumb, but, like, it's subconscious. Like, you end up doing it, and then someone's like, why have you got your thumb? And you're like, oh, I didn't even notice. Or, like, you're biting your nails and you don't really notice that you're doing it.
Yeah.
that's a habit. A habit isn't going to the gym. You don't just end up at the gym without any conscious effort.
I think what you call it is a non-negotiable.
Yeah.
Is an even better way of looking at it. Like, it's a non-negotiable that you have set yourself for the remain, or from week to week, you have non-negotiables that you need to tick off, and that's it. You know, you could look at them as habits if you wanted, but a non-negotiable is something that you're giving yourself that you must do, like, regardless of what goes on around it. And I think that's just a really good way of looking at it.
Yeah. Okay. So before we move on, I want to ask you a couple more questions about maintenance, because I got a couple of questions about this recently, just like generally, like, how do you maintain a lean physique, right? And nobody wants the answer of consistent hard work, like effort. Like, it's called effort. I just apply some effort. But the thing is, once you've committed to that, you kind of, like, and we've spoken about this before, but once you truly, fully commit to a goal, you take this sort of decision fatigue away. So it's not like every single day I'm making these choices. Oh, should I, you know, behave in this way, or should I behave in a completely different way? No. Like, it's kind of what I do now. And I guess in that sense, those decisions are almost habitual, or like the decision has been taken away because that's just what I'm going to do. Like, I make the decision once and that's what will happen, as opposed to thinking about that constantly. And I think that that's a huge element in maintenance, but also the way that you think about the actions that you're doing is probably the biggest thing, rather than the actions themselves, because exactly the same behavior in two different people, depending on how they look at it, can feel massively restrictive and unenjoyable. Like, if they resent that behavior, like if you don't enjoy going to the gym, you resent going to the gym, and you see it as like almost punishment, it's going to be almost impossible to maintain that behavior, because it's always going to take so much of you to push yourself to go. But if you can find something that you enjoy, or at least you enjoy the outcome of it enough, like you value the outcome of that enough to do it, that's a massive step in the right direction. And then fitting it into your life as well. Like, I've spoken quite a lot over the last couple of weeks how, like, I've massively reduced the amount of time that I spend exercising, and I just make it way, way, way more efficient. And it's not impacted my results in the slightest. In fact, I'd probably say I'm in the best shape I've potentially ever been in, with the least amount of exercise and the least amount of, I don't know if effort is the right word, but yeah, probably like perceived effort, right? Because effort is perceived. Like, to me, it's very, very little effort. To someone else, that might seem like a hell of a lot of effort.
Yeah.
But again, that's kind of how you're thinking about that behavior. And I think that whenever we talk about maintenance, like, a lot of people are like, how many calories do I sit at? How many, you know, and it's all like almost the minutia of like the exact amount of things that you need to do. Whereas actually what's a much bigger impact there is how you're thinking about those actions. Like, if you can change your mindset around doing those things, maintenance is, like, I don't want to say easy, because it's always going to require effort, but it's not difficult.
No, maintenance is an interesting one. It's something that, you know, it's very easy to want to be at maintenance, but so many people aren't willing to try to get just sit at maintenance, because it does seem it's probably quite a bit of a shock when you actually realize how much work you need to do to stay at maintenance. Like, this isn't like, as exactly as you said, like, you know, oh, you know, cutting weights or cutting body fats really hard, or putting on muscles really hard. Like, sitting at maintenance is difficult, because you've got that fine balance of, you know, if you overshoot by 200 calories one day, you're going to see a lift on the scales, like, or 300 calories. If you keep doing that over the course of a week, you're going to see a lift on the scales, and you're going to be sitting away from maintenance. And I think it's, you know, I think it's just something that people, I think the biggest issue that we have is there's so many things that change in people's lives that they don't want, that they keep changing what they want. So one minute I want to build muscle, one minute I want to cut body fat, one minute I want to set a maintenance, and then it changes over again. And I think, exactly as you said, you need to make a decision and you need to stick with the decision. So, like, there's no reason why you can't change things as you move on, but this thing of changing goal patterns every 3 weeks, like, it's, you know, you're giving yourself a real tough time to get your head around it, because your head's constantly having to change its goals and what the output is. So yeah, it's
yeah, but, I think so we're going to come on to this with, we're going to do like a reset of goals for the committed team basically, because I think that for some of them they've been on committed a long time and maybe like it's very easy just to like lose sight of your goal a little bit. And as Andy's saying, like I sort of agree and disagree with this. So I agree with you that you should have some kind of long-term vision and that your short-term goals should lead to that. But I also think that there's a lot of like iteration to be had here. So if you've got a long-term goal of building muscle, for example, but you're moving house in the next 3 weeks and you're like, I don't need more pressure on myself, or like maybe you've got a long-term goal of losing fat, but over the next 3 weeks you've got family coming to stay and you want a bit more flexibility, it's absolutely fine to be like, I'm going to go to maintenance and then after that I'll slip back into a bit of a deficit. And like changing things a little bit like that is fine as long as you still have the vision of that long-term goal.
Yeah.
But you're right, if you're like changing like, okay, my long-term goal is building as much muscle as possible, and then the next week you're like, I want to be really, really lean, and then you're like, I didn't care about either, I just want to sit at maintenance, like that can be hard. But I think this, so I've written a bit of a presentation around this, and I think that it's going to be really useful for people to sort of align their big vision with their shorter term goals and their values around the rest of their life as well, just to make sure, because yeah, a lot of the time the problem is that these things are clashing. They're like, I want to lose fat, but I also want an incredible social life and I want to drink 3 times a week and I want to blah, 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 blah. It's like, okay,
yeah,
now that we've written this down on paper, you can see that some of these things are clashing. Now yeah, you have to make a cost benefit decision of what's more important to me at the moment, going out 3 times a week or losing body fat. And you might decide going out 3 times a week is more important. Like, we're not here to make those decisions for you or judge yeah, those decisions. But you, again, it comes back to ownership. Like, you have to take ownership of that decision. Cool. If you want to go out that much, if you want to eat that much, fine. But you won't lose body fat doing that.
Yeah, that's it. I think I've had a few folk over commit and committed over the last sort of 6-8 weeks that, you know, things like house moves and exams and dissertations and stuff. And I think although, exactly as you said, although fat loss may be the long-term goal, you need to take the pressure off yourself when you've got stresses outside, you know, because let's be fair, fat loss is hard to get around, and it's hard to get your head into that position and to keep yourself in that position of cutting, of having, sitting in a deficit and pushing your calories to be able to lose body fat, to then chuck on something like a house move or a 15,000 word dissertation as well as 2 exams. You maybe just need to turn around and say, well, actually I'm going to go back to maintenance for 3 weeks of this and then I can get back onto the long-term goal afterwards. You're exactly right. I think that's their reasons why you would do that, but you know, you still keep in mind about what the long-term plan is and what the long-term goal is. And I think for the committed guys, you know, there's so many of them that as you go through their stuff, you know, we're obviously trying to give them a little bit of like kind of outlook about, look, maybe it's time to change your goals and stuff, but giving them something that actually sits and goes, right, time to reevaluate, time to rejig your goals. Do we have to change what our outlook is? Where are we going? Or do we keep on going, but we need to maybe make some amendments elsewhere just to shake it up a little bit? Because keep thinking and it keeps you fresh and keeps your head in the game as well.
Yeah, I think it's really motivating as well. Like whenever I sort of do this, less so with physique stuff now, but like more with business goals, and I sit down every month and sort of see what's happened this month, you know, what went well, what didn't go well, what I'm doing going forward. Like it always massively motivates me, and it also gives you action points. So instead of just thinking like, yeah, I've got this long-term vision, but like it's always there in my head, but I don't really know the first steps I should be taking to get there. It's like aligning those steps that you need to do right now with the long-term goal. And that's really motivating, because that's what incentivizes action and actually taking action, especially if your long-term vision, which it should be to be fair, is quite big and kind of scares you. Like if it doesn't a little bit, if there's not like an element of you that's like, I'm not 100% sure I'll definitely be able to achieve that, then it's probably not a big enough long-term goal. And obviously we set like shorter term goals as well, which you should be able to envisage yourself achieving. The other thing I want to make, even though I've kind of just like agreed with you, but this is just like devil's advocate, I actually think that it's easier to diet when you're busy. Like easiest diet I ever did during my dissertation. Like, what do you need at that point in time? Focus. Like, same with you when you're moving house. Like, you're so busy doing a million things, and it's quite stressful, and you know, you've actually not really got time to sit down and eat very much. And like, I don't know if this is controversial or not, but eating less actually requires less time. I know, mind blowing. But a lot of people are like, yeah, I'm just too busy to diet. I'm like, again, comes back to excuses, right? Sure, if you want to use that as an excuse, absolutely fine. That's your deal if you want to do that. But realistically, eating less takes less time. Like, yeah. There's absolutely no reason you can't be in a deficit when you're busy. And in fact, I would argue it's easier. I think one of the reasons that so many people put on weight during lockdown is because they had so much more time. And what do you do with your time? Like, I spoke to Amelia about this yesterday, but every time I go on holiday with my family, and I'm sure everyone's like this with their family probably, but we always go to like this little island in Scotland, right? There's absolutely nothing to do. Nothing. I don't know why we go. Like, my parents love it. It's idyllic. It's just not my thing at all. But all we do while we're there is like, great, let's have breakfast. Okay, cool, that's done. Go for a little walk. And then it's like, what are we going to do for lunch? And then spend like hours from, and then it's like, okay, well, dinner. Like, all there is, the only occasions during the day are eating occasions, like breakfast, lunch, and dinner. There's literally nothing else to do. And I feel like that's how so many people lived during lockdown. There was nothing else to do apart from, oh, meal times, we should probably eat something. That gives us something to do. So I think that like kind of shows how much harder it is to lose weight when you have a hell of a lot of time, because you just end up boredom eating essentially.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay, so we're 20 minutes in, so should we answer a question?
Yeah, let's do it. Okay, now, number one. I know the group is super supportive, but I still don't feel personally accountable. How can I change this mindset? I find I can fade into the background of a group, avoid the group entirely when I'm feeling down.
Well, I guess, I completely get that. This is honest, like, as much as this is a bit tough love, like, this comes down to personal accountability. Like, we aren't mind readers. Like, we need to know if you're struggling. You have to be accountable to that. So that's something that you need to change. The group is so supportive. Like, if you put something in the group and you're worried, you'll probably have a reply from 3 coaches within an hour, and you'll probably have 10 times that from other people in the group. Like, there's not much more support we could give in that aspect. But this is also why you do check-ins, right? So that you're personally accountable. You're not just accountable within the group, and we're not just helping you within the group, but you do your one-to-one check-ins with your coach, because that's your absolute personal accountability. And like, hats off to this person, because if they're not feeling that accountable or that much like they want to check in, but they've done their check-in, great. Like, those are the check-ins you needed to do, and this is probably what you need to hear. But you need to reach out to us if you're struggling or if you're not feeling accountable. Like, that's kind of on you. Like, we need that from you. We support you a hell of a lot, but we need to know where you need support.
Yeah, I think the stuff like we have, like the accountability posts that go up in the group every evening, I actually think I made a suggestion here with, rather than if it's the group that maybe you don't get so much from, why not get a whiteboard and do your own accountability post each day on your own whiteboard? What have you done? I've done my steps, tick. Done this. What can you do tomorrow that's going to equate to you getting better or making more progress? A lot of this is just exactly about, it's about finding, like, being personally accountable, unfortunately, as Emma said, the tough love thing is about sometimes you just got to pull on the big boy, big girl pants and, like, just get shit done. Like, you know, one of my favourite memes is the dog carrying its own lead across the road. It's just like, sometimes we just need to adult ourselves, like, and that's unfortunately, you know, we can give you all the support you want, but if you aren't feeling personally accountable, that's unfortunately down to you, and you just need to work out, how do you make yourself accountable? Is it doing the check-ins? Is it forcing yourself to go on to do the accountability post in the Facebook group every night when it's on at 7:30? Or do you take it away and do you get a whiteboard and stick it on the front of your fridge and just do your own accountability post so that you're accountable to yourself? You need to work out where this fits for you and how you make yourself accountable. That's probably, and that's, again, it's that horrible one of, it depends. It's depends on you. Like,
yeah, it depends how you're motivated, but I really like the whiteboard idea. And The thing is, you have to be... So I have, like, a list that I do every day. But I'm so... Like, I have so much respect for that list. Like, nothing goes on that list that I don't intend to do. So I'm not, like, overreaching. I'm not, like, every little tiny thing that I need to do in the world right now is on this list. And I'm not, like, massively over-pushing myself or over-exerting myself. What I do, whatever's actually really important to me, I write on that list. So even if you write three, again, like these non-negotiables we talk about, maybe you're saying, I need to be accountable this week to getting in 10,000 steps every single day, not a weekly average this week. I'm going to go every single day. And then I need to get in three workouts a week. When are they getting done? Like, write those things on your whiteboard. And as you do them, cross them out. So satisfying. But yeah, that would be something. And in the, actually, I think it's the last podcast to this, or maybe the one before about motivation. I would listen to that because it's quite a useful way to think about motivation, but also intrinsic versus extrinsic motivation. And I speak about how one of the examples they give to motivate yourself is to basically create extrinsic motivation. So like, I'll buy myself some shoes when I lose 5 pounds, or I'm going to, I think one that like comes up quite a lot, which I find quite strange, but I'm going to give money to a charity that I don't like if I don't reach this goal, you know, like a negative enforcement of motivation. Yeah. Wow. So like there's websites where you can commit
that bloody
to...
cat charity.
Well, that's what I was like. I was like, what charities wouldn't you like? But then they used examples of like homophobic charities and stuff.
You know, oh, wow. There are homophobic charities.
Yeah.
What?
Or, yeah, like, or like, I don't know, like giving money to like Trump Foundation or some shit.
Oh, you
know,
right,
like,
right.
That you yeah. Absolutely hate.
Wow.
Yeah, or like, I don't know, People Against Global Warming or some, I don't know, something like that.
Flat Earth Society.
Yeah. So anyway, you can use things like that, but I just think that they're a really poor form of long-term motivation. I think that you might get some short-term motivation from that, but you certainly wouldn't, like, it's not going to help you with kind of what we were talking about before, like maintenance. Once you've achieved that goal, then that negative reinforcement isn't going to benefit you anymore. If you have a goal of losing 10 pounds and you're like, great, I need to do it by X day, or I'm going to give 10% of my income during that time, that's quite a lot, to like a homophobic charity or like a homophobic foundation or some crap that you don't agree with, right? Then you probably will do it, but then like, what's your incentive to maintain that?
Yeah, this is Emma coming around with the "I'm going to shoot your dog" analogy again.
Yeah, basically quite similar to that. Also, someone's put like a crying face emoji to the live, and I don't understand why. And I'm really sorry if we've hurt someone's feelings. I'm hoping it was like a slip of the thumb.
Maybe because I said about cat charities.
Maybe. Maybe we've done too much tough love so far.
Yeah, maybe. That's maybe a good shout. Okay. Right, next one up.
Probably not going to change.
I know the scales fluctuate and I know all the reasons why we shouldn't focus on them, but I can't help feel disappointed that they've gone up. I'm only weighing every 2 weeks for check-ins in an attempt to lose scale focus, and I know the advice will be to weigh daily to see fluctuations, but I feel like that will make me even more focused on them.
Okay, yeah. If that is going to make you even more focused on them and you can't be sort of logical and rational about it, and by the way, that's not a dig, a lot of people can't be, then what I would do is stop weighing at all and focus on other factors. So I'm assuming that fat loss is a goal if you're weighing yourself anyway. So let's start doing proper measurements, like waist circumference, thighs, upper arm, like let's get those done. Yeah. And let's look at your dress sizes, let's take proper progress photos. Like, and let's focus on those if the scales is too big a problem for you. But the thing is, if the scale weight has gone up because you've measured yourself once in 2 weeks and then once again in 2 weeks, like it could literally be anything. Like I lost like 3 pounds in the last 2 days because I just came on my period. Like that's like completely normal. But if I just weighed myself, you know, like today versus yet, like that's potentially 3 weeks worth of fat loss.
Yeah.
That would have been masked on the scales.
I think the big one for so many people is to realize that, like, you know, yes, we have this sort of the non-scale weight stuff that you look at, like measurements and stuff, but weight and measurements aren't linear. They don't work together. So just because your weight's not moving, doesn't mean that your inches won't move, and vice versa. Your inches might not move, but your weight might drop. So this is the, I think we get this tie-in where everybody thinks that all scale measure or all measurements will move at the same pace at the same time, and they'll all move with each other, where they totally don't. So, you know, I had a few check-ins. Oh, my weight's not moved, but my inches have dropped. And you're like, perfect. Like, you know, that's great. Oh, but my weight's not dropped. Yeah, but your inches have dropped. Like, that's what you want. Like, my clothes are fitting better, but the weight's not dropped. What does it matter then if your clothes are fitting better?
Exactly. And like, a good example of this is that, so there's the whole like muscle weighs more than fat, right? It doesn't, but it takes up less space.
Yeah.
That's the point. Okay. So if you've managed to build some muscle and lose some fat at the same time, yes, the scale weight loss will be a lot slower because you've also put on some muscle, but your measurements will look significantly different because that muscle takes up less space than fat does. So if your measurements are going down, but the weight isn't going down, that's actually a really good sign. Like, that is exactly what we would hope, because that is quite a good sign that you're either very well maintaining or building muscle in a deficit, which is like literally the holy grail, like exactly what you would want to happen. So if anything, if we see someone's measurements go down, but the scale isn't moving or it's moving very slowly, that's a great sign for us.
Exactly.
So bloody well done.
Exactly. So the next one we've covered a few times with different stuff, but it's quite an interesting one.
Creatine, by any chance?
No, it's actually not. It's not. I don't think I've had any creatine ones. Like, everybody's freaking out about asking creatine questions in case they get chucked under a bus or something.
It's such a shame when someone new comes into the group and they're like, I'm really sorry, but like,
what's the deal with creatine?
Yeah, why aren't we allowed to ask about it? I'm like, no. Like, and honestly, anyone can ask anything. We just find it funny.
Yeah. Okay, look, how accurate are the sleep trackers? My average time is around 7 hours daily. I have a Samsung watch that records my deep sleep around 0 to 10%, mostly around 0%, 0 to 10 minutes deep sleep. Could the lack of deep sleep affect my weight, and should I do something about it? So the first thing that I said to this one was, because you're worrying about your sleep because of a sleep tracker, your sleep's going to be worse. So ditch the sleep tracker.
Yeah, I mean, my first question would be, forget the sleep tracker. Do you struggle with sleep or not? Like, do you feel like you're struggling with sleep or not? Because that's a much better predictor than whatever your watch is going to say.
Yeah.
100%. The other kind of question that's coming off of this is, can not sleeping very well impact your weight or your ability to lose fat? And the answer is yes, but not directly, in the sense of, like, it still comes down to energy balance. So it will certainly, like, generally on a very basic level, not sleeping and being tired makes literally everything you do harder and less enjoyable. So there's that. You're also far less likely to want to go to the gym if you're tired. You're far less likely to want to get your steps in if you're tired. You're far more likely to comfort eat if you're tired. Probably have a hell of a lot less willpower. So if someone does offer you 3 cookies instead of 1, you're probably going to go for 3. Like, that's the main reason sleep impacts your level of body fat. There are some more like molecular sciencey reasons, like it can reduce insulin sensitivity, but again, like the way that impacts fat loss is via the impact of that on how you're metabolizing glucose and how hungry you feel. And actually insulin is a very good regulator of hunger, or plays a role in that anyway. So again, it all comes down to your behaviors as opposed to anything that's magically happening within your body, where basically you can't be in a deficit and not lose body fat because you're not sleeping very well.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen.
Nice, simple one that I'm not sure, maybe you and Hannah did cover this on the vaccine podcast, but I had my vaccine yesterday and trained this morning because I felt fine. My arm was a bit achy. But I wondered whether scientifically it's okay to train after a vaccine if you feel well.
Kind of wish Hannah was here, but yeah, I'm going to say yeah. If you feel fine, I don't see a problem with it whatsoever.
Yeah, I had my vaccine last Monday, and I just you know what it's like. You hear all these scare stories about people going, "Oh my god, like I felt so ill afterwards." And I think if you start thinking like that, you probably will end up being ill because your mind just goes, "Well, we've had something in us, let's just break down for 2 days and end up having to sleep for 36 hours." So I just ended up taking, me and Laura went together. So I was just like, "Right, we'll take a paracetamol half an hour, 45 minutes before." Had the vaccine. She was going out to do some stuff because it was the day after her birthday with the girls. I went to the gym, smashed some caffeine, took a cup of paracetamol before bed. Absolutely fine. Bar the fact I felt like somebody had punched me in the arm, but that was it. Everything was cool. So,
well, this is the thing as well. Like, obviously Andy didn't share that on his Instagram because it's not a particularly interesting story. Like, you don't hear people talk about the fact that they went and got a vaccine and nothing happened and they felt fine. But yeah, you do hear about the people that are like, yeah, yeah, I was in bed for a week after it. Like, I've got really bad side effects from it. Like, you will hear about side effects, but you're not going to hear about all the people that were just like, meh. Same way that you don't hear about the millions of people that buy lottery tickets every week and don't win. Because obviously they don't talk about it. But you'll hear about the one person that does, for sure.
It was quite funny because when we were there, obviously, you're sitting, having got to wait afterwards. And there was a guy who was in the queue behind us. And like, do you know when you get that thing like, I think maybe because I was a bouncer for 12 years, you kind of get a sort of feel for people. So the guy, it was like one of those big, long, sneaky queues, and he was like the next bit to us. Him and his girlfriend were there, and me and Laura were standing together, and like we were both pretty chilled about it all.
What? So it's like going to get your vaccine, like a total couples thing.
But the thing is, we got to the front, right? So we got to the front and they're like, "Oh, next." And I was like, "On you go, Laura." And the wee nurse is like, "No, it's fine. Just both come together. I'll just jab you at the same time." So that was quite nice. But this couple, so the girl was quite relaxed, but the guy obviously wasn't. He was pretty freaked out. And I think it's probably because he just didn't like needles.
Yeah.
And he was like, you could see him getting quite worried before he'd even got his injection. So afterwards, we were sitting out. And then he gets up and he's having like virtually an anxiety attack, which he's like, "I think I'm having a heart attack." And the woman's like, the first aider's like, "You're having an anxiety attack because you've just read the leaflet about all the side effects and you don't like needles. We've worked this one out. It's not a heart attack." And the guy's like, oh. And the girlfriend just looks like just wanted the ground to just swallow her up. I felt quite sorry for him because obviously if you're anxious about these things, it's going to exacerbate it. He's like, "Remember when you used to get your
also, I think what probably exacerbates it more is like if you're anxious about it, but you also kind of want to be the macho man and like not so it's like you're trying to hide it. You know, like when you know you can't laugh and then something's like mildly funny and then you're just like, yeah. It's only funny because you can't laugh.
Yeah, exactly. And it just makes it worse because you're having to try and hold it in.
Yeah, till the like, point I when think you just that, go... but like imagine feeling like so anxious, but you're like trying to pretend like you're not. And yeah, that probably makes it worse.
Yeah, exactly. But cool. Right, next one. We've got, how fast do you detrain when you can't strength train? For example, I was so excited that my squats were back to being over body weight. Now I won't be able to squat for a bit. Are there any performance reductions or consequences of true strength loss or just not from doing the movement? For example, neuromuscular coordination. So quite an interesting question. And a lot of it's for me, a lot of the stuff for like, see about exercise and stuff, like actual mass load. So like weight is really small amounts. The biggest gains that you'll get, as you see from like newbie gains, is all about activating the muscles in the correct order. So getting them all working and firing properly. So what you'll find is you might find that after 3 weeks of not squatting, you might find that your body just needs to break itself back into the position where it can squat properly again, because it's been 3 weeks since you've done it. It does remember and it will hold some form of muscle memory about how to squat, but not with the same load as you were doing previously. So it needs to understand if muscles activate A, B, C, D, it's trying to work A, C, B, D. It needs to get them in the right order and it takes a bit of time. Maybe take a session. It might even take as little as a set of squats to be able to the body to go, actually, I know which muscles I need to connect in which order and we'll get back to it. So unless you're taking like a year out of squatting.
How long did she say she was taken out?
It doesn't say. Just what says for a bit. So unless you're taking like a year out and you're doing literally no training whatsoever, I would maybe, that's something you would maybe take into account. But with everything else, standing up, sitting down, it's a squat pattern. You know, leg press, squat pattern. You can virtually do all these things, and your body will retain the memory and the way things move. So,
yeah. So I actually read a study about this the other week, and I'm really annoyed because I can't remember the exact figures. But the study was on like elite level athletes, but it was showing that it was comparing a group of people who stopped training completely in comparison to people who trained just 20% of their usual training load. So what would that be? Like if you were training 5 times a week and you went down to just one session, that would be 20% of your training load. Yeah. So they found that in comparison to the group that did absolutely nothing, they were able to save like half of the loss of, so I think they looked at outcome measures like VO2 max, strength, power output maybe. But anyway, strength was definitely in there. So they showed that, I think the numbers were over that period of time, which I think was 6 weeks, they lost 8% of their strength. But with doing just one session a week or 20% of their training volume, they were able to make up for half of that loss. So the kind of take home for me is that like even if you do a tiny bit, you're able to save a hell of a lot of the loss that you might have occurred if you'd just done nothing. And we see this in like bed rest studies as well. Like if you, I don't know, say for some reason you have to be in a hospital bed for a week, you will very quickly lose muscle mass, like within a week. It's actually quite scary. But if you're literally just like using gravity or having a gravitational pull on you, as in like you're standing and you're walking and things, then muscle loss is quite slow. So you lose it really, really quickly if you're completely immobile. But even if you're just walking around and like, it probably doesn't feel like you're using muscle doing that, but you are. Like then muscle loss is generally quite slow. So as long as you're doing like a little bit of activation, and even if you can just do 20% of your normal training load, you're going to save yourself a hell of a lot. The other part of that study was looking at how long it took you to then regain the loss that had occurred. And it shows that about, and this again, like you have to remember that this was on elite male athletes. I think they were like canoers, which I thought was quite strange, or kayakers or something. Anyway, it takes you half the time to regain. So again, like what Andy was saying with the muscle memory. So say you were off training for 6 months, it would probably take you about 3 months to get back to where you were before you had 6 months off. So that's kind of interesting.
There's a second part to this question. Feeling a little frustrated with not seeing progress, wondering if this has something to do with my training experience. I started lifting weights about 11 years ago, competing in cross country and track for my college. I've consistently trained since then, racing and lifting. Is it possible for my body to adapt to moving and exercise too well? I hope this makes sense.
Yeah, that makes total sense to me. And like, we're probably in the same position, really. Like, we've been going to the gym for so long. Not saying that we're like elite level or anything, but like we have a lot of lifting experience, right? It's not a novel stimulus to us anymore. And realistically, we're probably not going to see massive performance increases anytime soon because we're of that like higher level. And as you get like closer and closer to, I guess, like your genetic potential, or even like, I would say like your genetic potential within the environment and constraints that you live in. Like, I'm sure that I would see huge performance increases if I suddenly just went, I don't know, to a training facility and all I did was train, eat and sleep and rest. Like, I'm sure that in that situation, but within the situation I live and how I like to train and stuff, like I'm not going to see huge increases in anything because I have training experience.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, another example of this is like if you start on your fat loss journey and you have 50 pounds to lose, great. You're probably going to see like 1-2 pounds drop off every single week consistently. It's almost easy. Like the weight is literally just flying off you. When you only have 5 pounds left to lose, it's going to be painfully slow. Like you're barely going to see any change in the scales. Like I think I remember once doing a diet for a photo shoot and I was losing on average like 0.3 kilograms a month. So yeah. Like a tiny, tiny, tiny amount. And I could only see that because obviously I was taking so much data, like weighing myself every day and looking at the lowest point from each week. So like week to week, you can't see any changes there at all whatsoever. There isn't any. But every month I'd see like a at some point during the last week, there was maybe like a slightly lower point. Again, like it's not massively motivating, but equally if you want to get to, like the thing is where you are now, the only way that you could become more receptive to the training that you're doing really is to detrain first and then retrain to where you are. Like there's absolutely no point doing that. You kind of just have to accept that, because you're at a high level, the magnitude of increase you're going to see in anything is relatively small.
Yeah, very much so. You look at, like, I'm not going to be setting any PBs in the night, probably in my training anytime soon, just because, like, you know, I'm max virtually at the point where, you know, a 1.25 or a 2.5 kilo increase on my squat or my bench, if for me, is a massive win. Like, if I can manage to max out above that, you know, that's a big win for me because, you know, that's just, I know how long I've been training. I've been training since I was 11, so 28 years I've been training.
My whole life.
Yeah, I know. So for me, it's massively about, to be fair, like I've actually kind of flipped up my training again because of playing football. So I'm actually not attempting to do anything too mental. So, you know, I've come back down from, normally I'd be doing 18 to 20,000 steps a day. I've dropped mine back to 12,000 steps a day. I'm focusing more on recovery. And actually, I think my training's probably been better because I've been focusing on these things, funnily enough.
Funny that, isn't it, Andy? Remember we spoke about this a while ago and I was like, because I'd massively dropped my training volume and I was like, you were saying like, I train twice a day, but like, it's just what I enjoy doing. And I'm like, I bet you would get better results training less. But the thing is, and we spoke about this before, like you did accept that that's probably the truth. But if you're training for another reason, like enjoyment, then I guess fine. But again, it's owning your choices, isn't it? Like,
exactly.
You kind of have to accept that you're now training for enjoyment at probably the detriment to your gains.
Yeah, that's it. And I probably find that I'll actually get, I'm kind of at my dieting phase at the moment, so it's actually quite good. My recovery and stuff's been good. I always find that when I start to diet, my performance actually increases because you're obviously starting to tighten up on what you're doing with your nutrition. You're smarter about when you set your meals around your training so that you're feeling performance and stuff as well. So yeah, it's an interesting
you're just
to watch.
Like generally more disciplined. I spoke to Hannah about this in check-ins, but making choices like ahead of time, like so that I very rarely make choices about food now because I basically have the same breakfast and lunch most days, which leaves my brain open to making way more important decisions about way more important things.
Yeah.
Like
much easier.
Yeah.
Much easier. Cheer, we've got two questions left. Emma has spoken in previous podcasts about how losing weight doesn't damage your metabolism as much as people claim it does. She used the analogy of two 60-kilogram people, one of whom has dieted down from 100 kilos and the other has always been 60 kilos. The dieted down people would have a lower BMR, but only by 80 to 100 calories. In brackets, I think that's what she said.
Hey, that's impressive. Yeah, basically what I said, yeah. I'm pretty sure it was like, now I can't remember the exact figures, but like something random, like 82 to 136 calories or something. But yeah, no, basically the point is a lot of people are under the impression that they can't lose weight on, say, 1200 calories because they've damaged their metabolism, even though like what we would equate them to losing weight, they could probably lose weight on like 1800 calories. The difference might actually be that we'd estimate that they'd lose weight on 1800 calories, but maybe they'd be better on 1700. Not that they won't lose weight on 1200, which would be still a massive deficit. So it's just the magnitude of that effect.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect answer. Is there a greater effect for... Oh, wait a minute. I think this is the same part of the question. Is there a greater effect for people who have dieted up and down many times? I know your BMR would increase as you gain weight, but is there any research on the lowering of BMR every time you diet down?
Good question.
Last caveat to that is thank you all for your collective brains.
Oh, what a lovely question. And also, what an awesome question.
That's a decent one, isn't it?
I might have to go away and do some research on that, because in all honesty, I don't know. It would potentially make sense, kind of. Yeah. I'm going to go away and I'm going to come back to answer that.
Nice. That's the end of my questions.
That was great. I very much enjoyed that. Thank you.
No, all good. Some good questions there.
And some very exciting news for anyone listening on the podcast is that Commit to Six is now open. So you can sign up for the next intake.
I thought you were about to tell me Shona had had her baby.
No, but every time Shona doesn't reply within like 30 seconds, where I'm like, when did Shona last put up a story? It's been a couple of hours. Maybe she's in labour.
Have you had your baby yet?
Yeah. I'm always like, what's going on? Yeah. I feel like we need to be notified first and be like, if it's not in the Commit to Six group chat, like, I don't really care about you, like, telling your mum that you're in labour. Like, no. We need to know.
We need to know. The Commit to Six team are here.
I know. I'm so excited. Okay, so it's not that, but if you want to sign up to Commit to Six, then go to esgfitness.co.uk and you can now sign up.
And if you are feeling generous, pop on to wherever you get your podcasts and give us a little rating. 5-star is always good, because the more obviously you rate us, the more people see us, and even more people can tap into our knowledge.
Also, if you're like, I really love the ESG Fitness podcast, but I really love Andy, and I would just love to hear a little bit more about him, where can they find your podcast?
Oh, mine's is still one of those ones that's like on 5 things, because like Anchor just takes months to put
it
up.
Is it still
anyway.
Not on iTunes?
It's not on iTunes. It's on Spotify. And I think you can get it on, obviously, Anchor itself as well. But it's Alba Lifestyle, Real Talk.
Real Talk.
I pretty much sit down. I'm going to do that. In fact, I can't do it this weekend. I'll probably do it next week. Sit down and record about 10 of them in one go. So,
then
I all
short,
minutes.
Sharp,
it's nice,
no bullshit.
Exactly.
To the point.
It's all fun.
So go and have a listen to that if you haven't got enough of your Andy fix already.
Yeah.
Okay, bye guys.
Ciao.